Good evening and welcome to this week's show, The Gnostic Waves, the show on all things mystical, philosophical and psychological. And thank you for joining me, Diana Razam, this evening. Tonight I have a special guest, currently residing in Scotland. We're joined by Gnostic instructor Scott Billings. Hello, Scott.
Hi there, how are you going?
Yeah, I'm well, thanks. And bye. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. It's good to be here.
Yes. So last time you spoke to us about Taoism, but This time you are going to talk to us about entropy. So why this topic and how does this apply to our spiritual work?
Well, it's something I've been interested in for a long time. I think it's something that's really relevant to spiritual practice. And so the nature of the talk will sort of outline, you know, a definition and give us an understanding of what entropy is, and then begin to look at the forces involved and how we can utilize or make use of those forces to help us spiritually. So although it's a theoretical talk, there's a lot of practical application for it.
Excellent. So tell us more.
All right. So, as I said, this has been something I've been interested in for quite a while. Initially looking at it more practically and then going deeper into the understanding of the law itself. So we'll look at a definition as such. And entropy is, as many people may know, is the second law of thermodynamics. And thermodynamics is basically a branch of physics concerned with heat and temperature and their relation to energy and work in a closed or an open system. So it defines the variables such as internal energy and entropy and pressure that works within a body or a system, and its radiation or capacity for work or mechanical work. And it has quite a history. It first became an area of study in sort of the mid-1600s, and then in the mid-1800s it started to become much more readily studied as various motors and combustion engines and so on began to become achievable for society and in industry. And the so-called father of thermodynamics was a French engineer called Sadi Carnot, and he was a physicist and an engineer and started looking at the properties of heat and the nature of what happens when heat is exposed to certain chemical reactions and its capacity for potential or for movement. And so the term itself, thermodynamics, was first used in January 1849, interestingly, by a man called William Thomson, who later became Lord Kelvin, and he was a natural philosopher here in Glasgow. A very interesting man and has had a lot of impact on society here, but also the university. And Kelvin, the name itself, is then became known as the unit of measure for temperature itself. So Kelvin he defined absolute zero in terms of thermodynamics. This is the temperature at which all thermal motion ceases, so we get an absolute state. Other units include Celsius and Fahrenheit, which are named after other notable physicists and scientists. So this is sort of a background to how it came about, and over a period of, 100 years or so, a deeper understanding of thermodynamics was developed and it became a real field of study. In thermodynamics itself, there's four laws, and so today we'll look at the first two, which are most relevant to us. The first law is a version of the law of conservation of energy. And it states that the total energy of an isolated system is constant and that the energy within that system can be transformed from one form to another but can't be created or destroyed. The important thing here for us is this idea that energy undergoes transformation and can't be created or destroyed in that way but is just transformed. The second law states at a basic level that heat in thermodynamics, heat cannot spontaneously flow from a colder location to a hotter location. So the second law of thermodynamics is an expression of this universal principle of the dissipation of kinetic and potential energy, which is just energy itself, observable in nature, that over time differences in temperature and pressure and chemical potential tend to even out in a physical system. And so entropy then is a measure of how much this process has progressed. Higher entropy within a system means a less potential for dynamic movements within that system until it reaches maximal entropy or equilibrium, which is a static state. And lower entropy means a more potential for dynamic movements within that system, so a higher capacity for energy. So a basic example, if we have a container a sealed container that has two compartments, and one's filled with cold water and one's filled with hot water. And if we remove a wall or a barrier between these two containers, it will induce convective movement, so that the movement of these two bodies of water. And this is obviously seen as a closed system, and the contrast between the higher and lower in terms of temperature enables these movements, and with time, the movements will become smaller and smaller and eventually cease. So this is the gradual loss in potential. In this instance, is referred to an increase in temperature, an increase in entropy. And this results in an equilibrated state of no movement. A similar thing we can see is, for example, with a cup of tea. This is an example that's often cited. So with a cup of tea, we have a body. It's an open system, but it has a certain degree of thermal properties or temperature. And over time, it will dissipate and equilibrate with room temperature. So this is the pure law in terms of thermodynamics. Later on, the concept was found, you know, to be applicable, the principle of entropy itself, to a lot of other academic fields, so biology and ecology, economics, information theory, which is interesting for us as esotericists, and particularly the study of the human mind as an information processing system. So in these esoteric studies, the law of entropy, particularly with regard to information theory and the study of entropy, was mostly put forward by Gurdjieff and his Fourth Way School, and particularly in his description of materiality of knowledge and impressions, which is that impressions being all the forms of energy that in matter that we take in through the senses. And he devised a table of hydrogens, which is a description of energy, depicting energy in varying degrees of matter found in all the levels or orders of creation. So we'll look a bit more at Gurdjieff and what Master Samael talks about this concept of energy, but looking at inorganic matters and organic matters, information and consciousness in this continuum across a broader range of levels or orders or systems. And the systems is really, you know, what we have to try and comprehend in terms of thermodynamics. So every system is seen as a container with a boundary, physical or otherwise, that separates it from its environment. This barrier is either permeable or not. And so every thermodynamic system goes through what's called a thermodynamic cycle. And this consists of a linked sequence of processes that involve the transfer of heat and work into and or out of the system, and eventually returns the system to its initial state. So entropy, as it's studied, always implies that there's an inevitable return to the initial state or a state of equilibrium, which is maximal entropy, which is a static state, and this is a mechanical law. So it's important for us to remember that energy in this sense transfers and moves from a warm or a hot region to a cold region, and this enables the release of energy. And the symbology and the actual importance of this we'll discuss in the second half of the talk in terms of esoteric practice. So the cycles of life are involved or implicated in all aspects of, you know, understanding this aspect of entropy. And as we start to look at this process, we see cycles that it occurs in, and we can see in bigger and bigger manifestations of this from cosmic days and cosmic nights of the Mahavantara and the Pralaya of the cosmos. And in this sense, we have a cosmic week of 7 days, and, you know, this is on a scale that's really inconceivable, but within each cosmic day we have a similar scale of 7 rounds, and within each 7 round we have a scale of 7 races and so on. And then in creation, we see again this, the 7 cosmoses down into the human level of the human being. From the absolute to the abyss, in all levels of creation, the law of 3 and the law of 7 are intimately involved in creation itself and the maintenance of the universe. So we see that with each lower dimension that is created in the 7 cosmos, which is an entropic process in itself, mechanicity increases by the number of laws governing each dimension or order of worlds. And whatever level or stage of these cycles we take it, each order or cosmos or world or organism constitutes a thermodynamic system. And its survival depends on keeping its own entropy lower than its environment or its surroundings. So this is really where it starts to get important to reflect and see what a system is and its relationship to the environment. So in other words, each organism feeds on negative entropy and excretes positive entropy. There's an interplay between a body and its environment. And as it's described in thermodynamics, which looks simply at physical characteristics or of processes, in this way, that no organism can be beneficial for its environment by its survival, because it increases the entropy of the environment by its existence. So in this sense, a human being and even the sun, which is seen as an electrical generator sending electromagnetic radiation, is constantly dissipating its own energy through its radiation and thereby increasing the entropy of the entire universe. Interestingly, and as an aside, Gurdjieff makes an enigmatic statement in Beelzebub's Tales to his grandson, where he says that the sun neither lights nor heats, which counteracts this idea of dissipation. And Master Samael also states in a lecture called The Secret of the Sun that the sun, in this sense, is not diminished in its existence, and that heat and light that we perceive or receive on this planet is due to our atmosphere. And this is a much broader topic beyond what we're looking at, but to get an understanding of this relationship between the spiritual nature of something and the physical nature of something. And so originally this process described involution, the process of entropy and the second law of thermodynamics. And looking at it in ideal states, as originally was done, they couldn't understand how evolution, which is the creation of order and higher energy systems or forms, could be created in a system governed by entropy. So as thermodynamics was studied more in depth, the process of order within creation by studying the phenomena of flow and turbulence within the system became seen as inherent, and evolution, although random and unpredictable, was theoretically possible according to the second law, which deals in large part with probability. So if we imagine in this vast movement of energy following the Big Bang, that within this system, there's pockets of energy that coalesce in this vortex of very high energy and low relative or local entropy, where higher and higher order develops, and over time through vast chemical interchange, life that emerges. It's an incredible process to sort of reflect on and consider. So recent studies have found in complex system dynamics that point to the existence of certain principles that allow structures and organisms to emerge out of this top-down process of creation or involution, albeit governed by the law of entropy. None of the research has really, indicated the real possibility of counterbalancing or overacting on the law of entropy. But either way, this idea that, entropy governs the nature of the universe and will eventually lead it to a stable state. So, we can ask them in studying these laws and these orders that exist and emerge and the transformation of energy, how is this, becoming more applicable to us? And in that sense, the law of three and the law of seven are intimately involved in the creation and maintenance of the universe. And we see an increasing number of laws progressively downward from the absolute into the galaxy, the solar system, this planet and human life. And these laws then increasingly mechanical, limit the freedom and movement and therefore the transformation of energy that we have at lower and lower levels. And so we find that human beings at this level of creation have a very short life expectancy due to a higher force of entropy, an increased degree of mechanicity, a limited capacity for energy exchange. So this is increased entropy, a less capacity for work and movement and freedom. So, in ancient texts and history, we find stories of beings that lived for longer periods of time, 1,500 years, 800 years. So we see that for us now at this particular time, we're under different laws due to the fall and the complication of the ego, which increases the entropy that we're under and the number of laws and the mechanicity of what we experience. So we find ourselves in this position as human beings. So we're in a physical state governed by 48 laws in the physical dimension. But our psychology, due to the complication by the ego, is under increasingly more and more laws. So in this state, from a physicist's perspective, looking at it purely from a physical way, if they were to entertain the possibility of spiritual development, it would be seen as impossible to develop because of entropy reigns supreme. It's such an enormous force in creation. And or the probability would be so low that it would be negligible. So the entire universe is under this law of entropy, which is seeking to equilibrate all matter, leading to a static state, which is really equitable with death. And we see this in all systems. And life, again, from a physicist's perspective, is really an anomaly in a world governed by entropy. And this thin film on the life of life on the surface of this planet, in this solar system, is seen as a random event and is in actual fact seen as contributing to the entropy of the universe, albeit at a very slow rate. And so this in itself is a pessimistic state of affairs. You know, what science presents us with is just inevitable destruction. But if we look at this in terms of esotericism, and esotericism studies involution and this step-down process governed by entropy, and it looks at evolution, which is the development of life of varying degrees of physical complexity, albeit random and improbable, but both together forming this limited cycle of transition. And what physical science doesn't study or take into account is this idea or this capacity for revolution, which is the capacity or the potential to liberate ourselves from the entire system and to come off this cycle, variously called the wheel of samsara or the bhava chakra, and what that revolution entails. So this entails seeing a purpose to creation and seeing life, which is created and sustained existence and consciousness, as having interdependent yet opposing outcomes, so between spirit and matter. So looking at this as a basis, you know, to really see there is a purpose to life in creation, and that life as it evolves serves a purpose for consciousness. And so having this background into, you know, just a brief description of entropy, we can perhaps take a break here and listen to some music. And then when we come back, we can go into more this process of revolution and understanding the forces that are at play in entropy and spiritual practice.
Thank you, Scott. Very deep and much to reflect on. Okay, so given that you're talking about Gurdjieff, we might go to some music composed from him, and we'll be back in a short while to continue on this topic. Okay, we're back on the Gnostic Waves. You've just been listening to a track by Gurdjieff, and I'm joined with Scott Billings, who's talking on the very interesting topic of entropy, so the second part of his talk. So, Scott, I leave the audience in your hands.
Thanks, Diana. So picking up from where we left off, this idea of revolution requires us to see outside the process of involution and evolution whilst intimately understanding how they work. And so theoretically speaking, for anything in the universe to be able to be of any use to the whole or to liberate itself from the second law, it must be connected with a source that is of a higher order and that never dissipates itself by its radiation or is in contact with a certain emanation that never dissipates its source. So this is the basic tenet of universal spirituality. And we see this in each of the main religions. We find it highlighted. And there's a wonderful extract from the Bhagavad Gita that depicts this. And this is, again, for those familiar with this text, it's a conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. And they're discussing the relationship between Purusha, which is the universal consciousness or spirit, and Prakriti, which is matter. And Krishna says, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Altogether, these eight compromise my separated material energies. Besides this inferior nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is a superior energy of mine which consists of all living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both its origin and its dissolution. And I think this encapsulates and sums up, you know, what we're looking at here, this process of creation and involution and the capacity for evolution and then the liberation of consciousness from within that. And so to understand this principle or the possibility of revolution or liberation requires a supreme source of energy and the liberation of consciousness. And we see this in Gnosis, it's inherent. Master Samael has a lecture called The Harvest of the Sun, which is his experience of a teaching given by Gurdjieff, which is the side octave of the sun. And modern physicists, you know, study matter essentially and can't really conceive of a spirit as a force or that pure consciousness is something distinct of matter. Yet we see that this is the basis of all traditions and is something that we study deeply and profoundly in Gnosis. So evolution and life itself opposes entropy, but only to a certain point. And then entropy wins the day ultimately. And so we see this, that life has a certain capacity for growth, but ultimately death is inherent and part of life itself. But we see this more intimately in our day-to-day life with digestion and respiration and and all mechanical processes supporting our lives temporarily or for a given or a certain period of time. Looking more broadly, we see that the sun, based on this topic by Master Samael, as the main source of energy and life for this planet, has placed in our glands the seeds to create and sustain life, and it nourishes us in all ways. So with this, we have the possibility of transformation, and we can overcome entropy, and this implies the liberation of forces superior to that of entropy at each level of existence. And this is processed along the path according to the law of seven and supported by the law of three. And so this is really the spiritualizing force in the universe, as it's described in the law of three, where we have an interaction of two opposing forces, in this instance, life and entropy, and a resultant third force, which reconciles them and is a result of the conflict or collision or interaction of these two opposing forces. And so when they meet, friction is created, and this friction generates heat, which can be the potential for work. So the crux of this, in terms of understanding it, is where the energy or heat goes once it's created, and it is either retained inside the system or it's dissipated or released outside of it. So we see this again in the law of three. It's found in the triads and the trinities of most religions and spiritual schools, this positive and negative meeting and creating a neutralizing force. So if the negative force, in this instance entropy, is stronger than the positive or active force, in this case life, the resulting neutralizing force is of a lower order, and so entropy increases, leading to a neutralized state, which is death. And here we see the dissipation of life through identification and externalization in all the ways that we're familiar with in gnosis and spiritual practice. If however, the positive force overcomes this negative force, then the resultant force is of a higher order, and entropy decreases, and the energy remains in the system to support its development. So in an open system like the human body, all of this hinges on whether the energy remains in the system or it's released. And so looking more deeply into this idea of matter and its relationship to higher levels of energy, Gurdjieff describes this as the designation of different matters or hydrogens on one universal scale of entropy, you know, covering inorganic matters, organic matters, air, information and consciousness in one continuum. And so hydrogens with smaller numbers are less in their universal entropy and closer to the source of everything that exists and have a higher capacity or potential for energy and work. And hydrogens with higher numbers fall under higher entropy, they're more dense and they have a less potential for energy. So in Gurdjieff's illustration of man as a three-story factory and later elaborated by Master Samael, the realms of thermodynamics and information theory interact by a contact between the food, air, and octave of impressions. And again, impressions being all forms of energy in matter taken in through the senses. And this contact and the digestion of various hydrogens liberates higher and higher forms of energy to sustain life. So we see food and air coming into the system, being acted upon by substances or matter of a higher order existing in the system itself, and then digesting and extracting from them a more refined or higher type of energy that's useful for the maintenance of the body or the system itself. But even within this creative evolutive process, entropy supersedes it and the body eventually will decay. So it's with the reception of impressions that mechanical life reaches its limit and that consciousness comes into play. So in this case, we must supply a superior force, again existing in the system, to be able to digest the impressions to overcome the resistance of life or of entropy. So we can't go into the minute detail of this in all the levels of the hydrogens and triads, but coming back to this basic definition of entropy, that heat cannot spontaneously flow from a colder location to a hotter location, and that over time energy in a system will degrade or lose potential. So in this we have a mechanical life arising due to evolution, is governed by mechanical laws, determining our capacity for movement and transformation. So we see that we have a lunar psychology, and we have lunar internal vehicles. Symbolically and actually, these processes are cult based in a state of increased entropy, that is of a lower order of potential energy. So we have to cooperate with the sun in this sense. We have to generate a superior heat or force to overcome this entropy. And we find this in the Divine Mother, in Prakriti, in the Kundalini Shakti, which is an electromagnetic force of the highest order. And so we use this force of prakriti to liberate ourselves progressively from each cosmos, to make our psychology solar, to create the solar bodies simultaneously using the force of prakriti to liberate the conditioned consciousness by eliminating the conditioned ego and elevating and self-realizing. So prakriti, by liberating the energy or matter of various levels or orders, in turn liberates the purusha or the consciousness, and it awakens and self-realizes. So the consciousness then enters creation in order to self-realize. And it is through the source of energy for creation that we liberate the consciousness progressively. And the basic or fundamental principle of liberating this energy is sacrifice. So we see this idea of consciousness coming into existence, immersing itself in creation. There's energetic processes of involution and evolution taking place, and that consciousness utilizes the energy of creation to liberate itself, but requires this source of energy, which is found in the fabric of creation itself, the Divine Mother or the Prakriti, and the basis of which is sacrifice. And sacrifice is the transformation of energy or matter, liberating higher and higher forms of energy. It's digestion at its basic level. So coal sacrifices itself in its dense form to liberate the potential energy or heat to create movement and to stimulate or create the capacity for an engine. And food sacrifices its form to liberate energy of a higher order to sustain the physical body, and so on with air and impressions. And again, you know, there's much we can go into here about the inner workings of the body in relation to the hydrogens and the creation of sufficient quantity and quality of higher hydrogens from food and air and impression octaves that Gurdjieff describes and Master somehow elaborates on. But we have to see the potential for the development of sufficient levels of energy to overcome the process of entropy. And at the esoteric level, the crux of this process of transformation is the process of sacrifice and the awakening of consciousness. And so whatever level we find ourselves, sacrificing the matter, energy of that level to liberate higher forms of energy to elevate us to a higher level again, according to the law of the octave. And in so doing, we enable the consciousness to come to know itself in all levels of creation, fulfilling the purpose of creation itself for the monad or for the being. And throughout this process, there's certain energies and forces that are necessary or fundamental. So we have to understand that every process that occurs in life requires energy. Every movement, every thought, every feeling, state, experience requires energy to sustain it or to enable it. And depending on the state, there has to be a particular type of energy. So remembering this idea of the triads of a given matter acting upon a higher matter in terms of this idea of the triads, a given matter acts upon it on another matter, and the resultant matter is of a higher order than the first but not equal to the second. Hopefully you can follow that logic. So these fundamental forces that we talk about that are at play within this process of entropy are self-remembrance and the development of love, chastity and humility. There's more, but these are the main virtues in terms of force. And all of these forces enable us to act in the world. And so self-remembrance requires a certain energy inside us to be able to perform it. And it's the result of our work. It's not mechanical. And it initiates the elaboration of higher forms of energy inside us through the transformation or digestion of impressions, without which the awakening of the Kundalini and the development of the internal bodies is impossible. So self-remembrance as the awakening of consciousness is the foundation. And then chastity as another force is the result of a serious work and represents a significant force, which in terms of the hydrogens is another triad of matter elaborated in the interior of our system from the three octaves of food, air and impressions. So it changes the quality and quantity of our sexual energy, and it's a conscious spiritual force. So we have the hydrogen C12 of the food octave. We have through self-remembrance and pranayama the elaboration of Sol 12 of the air octave and Mi 12 of the impression octave. And so these three forces then within our interior can create. And this is, as I said, the elaboration of the sexual energy within us. And for these three forces, though, to create, again, a higher force is needed. So once we, through self-observation, we begin to remember ourselves, we begin to transform impressions, we start to elaborate higher forms of energy, Then through the process of chastity, we accumulate higher and higher forms of energy, and we elevate and purify the sexual energies. And then a higher force is required to transform this energy greater again. And this force is love. And love as a force, as faith, as awakened consciousness, love as the yearning for the being, the love for our alchemical partner, again enabling this creative process that acts and works upon the sexual energies. So this is a creative process, and love is a force of the highest order in this sense. And it acts as an agent of transformation in all processes of life, and sacrifices all inferior forms to channel these forces upward and into the heart where the Divine Mother resides. And it's the merits of the heart that regulate the raising of the Kundalini, which is the already worked sexual energy, this force of Prakriti or Shakti within us. So love and chastity in this sense is a forces that liberate us, and they regenerate our glands and our nervous system, and through the octave and into the higher octaves create the bodies in each of the dimensions. They liberate us from mechanicalness and eliminate the ego as we ascend, all the while overcoming entropy, you know, fundamental forces at our disposal. And perhaps one of the prime forces beyond these three of self-remembrance and chastity and love is humility. And humility is a true spiritual force that really exploits the very process of entropy itself. You know, to place ourselves in contact with higher sources of energy, so by means of the law of entropy itself, we absorb higher forces, because energy naturally flows from a higher to a lower state. So the being, the absolute, the teachings, the conscious circle of humanity, love itself, the cosmic Christ, the intimate Christ, our Divine Mother, that we really elevate and respect and venerate these higher principles in life. And in so doing, we create this capacity for a transference of energy from this higher form into us to support us to develop and elevate and liberate. And to really understand that without true humility, we can't contact these higher forces, these spiritual capacities. And without true humility, we can't participate in this great cycle of giving and receiving in life. So it's humility which is the acknowledgement of our true position and understanding of our need for help and guidance and support and inadequacy or incapacity to do these things on our own. You know, a true humility that comes from our understanding of ourself and our position. So I think it's really helpful to reflect deeply on this aspect of humility, as it's the basis for all transformation in regard to this idea of overcoming entropy, because it places us at the very contact point of this movement of energy from a higher to a lower order. So practically, these are the main forces that exist in regard to this idea of overcoming entropy. There's a lot more practical aspects that we can look at, and you know, Diana and I have spoken, and we'll do a follow-up on this talk and look at the practical aspect of this in terms of going into more detail about the cultivation of these forces and how to limit the leaking of energy and to begin to awaken the consciousness, to cultivate the quantity and quality of the sexual energies, and then to develop these virtues in relation to entropy and development and spiritual progression. So I think we'll leave the talk there, and we can do a brief practice, and hopefully, though, we can, you know, continue to reflect on these forces and this understanding of entropy to really make use of it in our spiritual practice.
Okay, excellent. So we'll just go to another very quick music break, and then we'll be back for the meditation part of the show. And we're back on the Gnostic Waves show, just about to enter into the meditation part, and Scott is going to be leading us in a practice tonight. So take it away, Scott.
So this will just be a brief and simple practice, but utilizing or making contact with some of the things that we've described in the talk in regard to entropy and some of the forces that we looked at in terms of, you know, the consciousness and to some degree, you know, chastity, but more so this idea of love and love for the being and humility. So let's just find a comfortable spot where we can sit, and we'll be in a brief relaxation process. So just closing our eyes and beginning this internalization. And gently becoming aware of the physical form. and getting a sense of the current state of our body, how we feel. And slowly and deeply just relaxing the physical body. Just allowing a sense of relaxation to move from the top of the head, progressively and steadily through the muscles, through the structure of the body, into the shoulders and arms, into the chest and upper back, into the abdomen, lower back, the hips, legs, lower legs, and the feet. And just letting our attention feel our entire body, trying to deepen this sense of relaxation. See that the physical form is always in the present moment, and it contains a certain quality and quantity of energy. And going more interiorly, we look at the energetic aspect of the body itself. And we can influence this through the pranayama, through the breath or the respiration. So just beginning to take complete breaths, inhaling, absorbing this vital prana. Filling the lungs, holding and retaining the breath for some moments, allowing the exchange of energy for the prana to accumulate in the heart, to open the nadis of circulation and distribute it throughout the body, and exhaling. And let's continue this process of pranayama for a few moments in our own time, our own rhythm. Inhaling, absorbing prana, retaining it briefly to a point that's comfortable, allowing this prana to accumulate in the heart and open the circulation and distribute unblocking energy that's accumulated and stuck. Process of pranayama, we deepen the relaxation of the body. We begin to quiet and silence the mind. Going deeper still, we can begin the practice of hamsa, which is the transmutation of the energies, the sexual energies. Inhaling, internally mantralizing, hum, as we see and feel the energies moving up the spine through Udara and Pingala, saturating the nervous system with its vitalizing prana, rejuvenating the brain, the various glands, and as we exhale, we pronounce the mantra sa, sending this energy into the heart. So again, in our own time, doing some cycles of pranayama, absorbing and saturating the body with this vital substance, purifying the energies, and returning them to the heart. understanding the deep nature of these sexual energies as an aspect of the Divine Mother. We transmute these energies and return them to the heart, where another aspect of our Divine Mother resides. And as we feel this energy accumulating in our heart, intimately we can begin to make contact with this higher aspect of ourselves, our Divine Mother. And through this contact in the heart, we cultivate and try and feel this sense of love, continuing to breathe and transmute, supplying our heart with this energy, accumulating this prana. And as it accumulates, we experience and feel that as a sense of love, this conscious sentiment directed with veneration and humility towards our Divine Mother, who provides for our life, nourishes, creates and sustains us, supports us in every aspect of our spiritual practice. Continuing to breathe, this process of transmutation, liberating and elevating this energy, containing it in our interior, and placing it at the service of the being, sacrificing our own will and the wills of our conditioned consciousness, with a yearning to know our being, to come in contact with our being, feeling intimately that this yearning itself elevates us. Liberates forces and energy inside of us. All the while continuing to breathe, transmuting this sexual energy at the service of the being, liberating this energy, accumulating it in our heart, and with love and humility and veneration for our Divine Mother, for our Father, for the being. Or in whichever way we're inspired in this moment, to life itself, to the Absolute. And deeply feeling and immersing ourselves in this sentiment, this feeling of love and veneration, of humility, of understanding. We retain this understanding and this feeling and this force in our heart. That we can utilize throughout our spiritual practice and in our life itself, to support us, to help us in times of difficulty and struggle, as a resource to overcome the force of entropy in all its varied manifestations in life. And we continue progressively to go deeper and deeper in this experience, to cultivate more and more energy, and then to learn to utilize it in more and more varied ways. So we give thanks to our Divine Mother, our Father who is in secret, the being itself. We give thanks. We consciously hold this energy in our heart as a precious gift to utilize as we need. And we can finish this practice.
Thank you for that lovely practice, and also for that balance of very scientific theoretical talk coupled with a practice that's very much more mystical. Okay, as always, thank you for joining us this week. If you want more information or past show recordings, please head to the website gnosticwaves.com. Or else we hope you'll join us next week, same day, same time, Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. And have a good evening.